Wasabi Wallet. Unfairly private.
What's up, everyone? I'm Ben with the BTC Sessions, and this is your daily session.
HODL than Bitcoin.
Before we dive into the news, of course, I've got to give a big shout out to sponsors of the show, Ledin.io. I've been working with and using these guys for well over a year now, and they have a variety of different services that you can use your Bitcoin with. Now, the first thing I ever used was their Bitcoin-backed loans. I was in a pinch, needed dollars, and I didn't want to sell my Bitcoin because that's taxable. And also, I was worried about having to buy back in at a higher price. So I was able to deposit my Bitcoin, get a loan to my bank account in Canadian or US dollars within 24 hours. And when I paid that back, I got back the exact same amount of Bitcoin. Now they have a couple other services. They've got their Bitcoin and USDC savings accounts. They've just upped their interest rates again to a maximum of 10% annually, depending on whether you're depositing Bitcoin or USDC. And they've also got their B2X offering, and this uses the same loan mechanism to instantly buy more Bitcoin, which effectively doubles your Bitcoin on the price, effectively doubles your Bitcoin on the spot. So if you're very bullish on the price, then maybe that could be something that you're interested in. Anyways, if you want to check them out, there's a link in the show notes down below. If you click that link, not only do you help the show, but also if you opt to get a loan, you will get $50 worth of Bitcoin for free. And secondly, if you want to help out the show in another way, privacy, of course, is very important when it comes to Bitcoin or really anything. And NordVPN is one thing that I use in my arsenal of privacy tools. What this does is it hides your IP address, it encrypts your browsing data, and it allows you to access geo-blocked content, or at least those are just a few of the benefits. So for me, I have it on my phone, my computer. If you're ever using public Wi-Fi, a VPN is a must because you never know what kind of a connection you're tapping into, and it really helps. Also helps for those of you that like to access content that may not be available in your area. You can simply change your location within the app and access that geo-blocked content on the spot. If you want to check them out through the link in the show notes, that will get you 70% off plus a month free. It ends up being about $3.49 a month, which is a pretty damn good deal. With that, let's dive into the news. And so I wanted to touch on price specifically, at least for the beginning of the show. I know I don't usually touch too much on this. It's really hard to cover it in a show like this because by the time somebody's watching it, it could be vastly different. But besides the fact, we've seen quite a run-up in, well, the past week or so. Well, more notably, the past, I'd say about 4 days, there was a bit of a spike. And we went from below 10,000, from kind of the low 9,000s. And when we finally got above around the 10,500 level, we just exploded up. We hit a high of just shy of $11,400. And right now we're around 11,100 at the time of recording this video. Now, people are speculating as to whether there's going to be another big pullback or whether we're going to blast past 12,000 and beyond. And so I wanted to kind of take a look at where we are, where we have been previously, what some of the larger kind of zoomed out charts and things look like, and what could be in our way. So I have this chart that's kind of where we're at and zoomed out. And so what we're looking at here is we see the all-time high from back in 2017. We see kind of like the massive drop that happened over the next year and a bit from that, I guess 2 years. And then we also see the kind of massive FOMO-driven spike that happened last June, right at in the midst of the Bitcoin 2019 event in San Francisco, which I was there for, which was really cool. The euphoria as that was happening in this gathering of Bitcoiners was really awesome. But besides the point, where we're at right now is we're kind of sitting at this level where there's potentially a little bit of a wall in and around that kind of high 11,000s to 12K range. Then there's still like the level that we we peaked up to in last year of June of last year in around the high $13,000, almost $14,000 range. And then there's not a lot of historical precedence for price points in between the 14,000 level and our all-time high. So that move could happen very quickly if we get into that realm, but who knows where we could go from here. Now, a lot of people tend to look at the Bitcoin stock to flow ratio created by Plan B. And so the reasoning behind this model has to do with the scarcity of Bitcoin and kind of these four-year epochs that happen whenever the issuance of Bitcoin is cut in half. And as we all know, or as many of us would know, that just happened in May of this year. It also happened in 2016, about a year before the crazy FOMO-driven pump of 2017. It also happened in 2012, which was followed up by 2013, which was another giant round of spikes throughout the year. So will that trend continue? And so the stock to flow ratio, I've kind of taken out a couple metrics here to simplify things. The messy dotted line that you see here is the actual historical price. And then this kind of smoother sloping line is the stock to flow average price predicted over an average of 463 days or around 2 years or so. And so what we're looking at here is we are tracking and have been tracking pretty damn close to this model for quite a few years now. Yes, it does go above and below it, but it tends to kind of rebound back as if it's like attached by an elastic band. Earlier on, it would have much more volatile spikes around this line, but since probably around 2015, we've stayed pretty close to it and sometimes overshot it by a bunch and then undershot it by a little bit, but not too bad. We are tracking quite close to it right now. In fact, right now, stock to flow has us at around 11.8, and we're at around 11.1. So we're below stock to flow right now, but we are starting to eke up closer to it as time goes on if this trend continues. Now, the question is, if we follow this model, for me, when do we see the reattainment of the previous all-time high? And if we just kind of go along here, we can see that the previous all-time high or above it would, if we stuck directly to the projected model, would be around mid to late November of this year. So a few months away. Now, some might say, well, that's a long ways to go in a short amount of time. Looking at this historical chart, okay, well, here's the previous all-time high, and let's just kind of like take out everything except for to the end of the year. So this would happen in just this tiny little sliver of space here to reclaim all of that, you know, that what is that? That's damn near between $8,000 and $9,000 in not a lot of time. However, let's take a look at historically what happened. Okay, so what I want to show you is where is it? This, okay, you see. Actually, first let's do this. Let's get rid of the craziness of, let's zoom out a little bit, and let's get rid of the craziness of 2017. Okay, so here's what I wanted to show you. This is a weekly chart. Each one of these bars is a week. And so in and around, when was this? In and around kind of December of 2016, we were basically where we are now. We were about two-thirds of the way to our previous all-time high. However, we managed to get back to our previous all-time high, albeit with a pullback afterwards, in a matter of 3 weeks. 1, 2, 3, and then we saw a pullback back below. We went decisively above our previous all-time high about 6 or 7 weeks after that. By an additional, 20% or something like that. It was decisively higher. And then we continued on our massive bull run. We saw peaks at around 3,000. We saw peaks at around 5,000. And then we went all the way up basically without stopping to damn near 20K. And so when you look at that, it can happen fast, right? We could easily go from where we're at to the previous all-time high in a matter of, a few weeks. It's definitely within the capability of Bitcoin to do so. Will that happen? That's anybody's guess. But I'm just saying, timing the market is incredibly difficult. I wouldn't task myself with doing so. And historically speaking, time in the market tends, especially when it comes to Bitcoin, unless you have incredible timing, time in the market tends to be better than timing the market when it comes to favorable outcomes. Now, I just wanted to point out one other thing. So in zooming out here, so here is basically all of Bitcoin price history. Well, not all of it, but a lot of it. A number of years, and you see this little blip down here. That was the insane rise of 2013, and it's almost indecipherable at this point. That little mountain in the bottom left-hand corner, that little hill, I suppose, compared to the mountain that was 2017. If this thing were to get going again in the same style that it has in the past couple of halvings, it could be shocking. And I'm not saying that it necessarily will, but if you've been in Bitcoin for a while, it can catch you off guard when it does happen. I know that was my feeling in 2017. So just try to mentally prepare yourself for that if it does happen. And furthermore, try not to constantly be looking at it, because it can give you a lot of anxiety. It can become a problem, even though it's something technically positive for you. It can be distracting, and it can throw a wrench in your life in general. So, take your time, enjoy it if it happens, but don't let it consume you. Okay. I guess that's it for my little advice spiel here. But either way, it'll be interesting to see what comes to fruition by the end of the year. Because again, if we follow stock to flow, even if we're a bit below, it looks like if it were to follow, it would be well within the realm of possibility of seeing previous all-time highs before the end of the year. So we'll see what happens. Now, in that realm, I wanted to touch on this, which for me, I was very, again, sign of the times. Things are changing. Just a few years ago, not even, you had people like Warren Buffett calling Bitcoin rat poison. You had the CEO of JP Morgan, Jamie Dimon, calling Bitcoin a scam and saying that he would essentially sack or fire anybody in his staff that actually bought and used Bitcoin. And now you have banks like JP Morgan actually banking major Bitcoin and cryptocurrency firms like Coinbase and Gemini. And then you have this, you have Fidelity Investments putting out a Bitcoin investment thesis. I'm not fucking kidding you. This is a real document put out by Fidelity. If you don't know, Fidelity is essentially a major investment consortium that's like global. They're based in the US, but yeah. So they have a segment called Fidelity Digital Assets, and they put out Bitcoin investment thesis, an aspirational store of value. And so I'll just kind of highlight what they're talking about here. They have a section of key highlights, and then there's something I wanted to point out as well. So their key highlights are as follows. Many investors consider Bitcoin to be an aspirational store of value in that it has the properties of a store of value, but has not yet been widely accepted as such. The silver lining of Bitcoin's volatility, at least in the early days, is that it is a catalyst that attracts attention, development, and innovation. Scarcity is a key characteristic cited in reference to a good store of value, as it is essential for protecting against the depreciation of real value in the long run. One of Bitcoin's most novel innovations is its unforgeable digital scarcity. Bitcoin scarcity was coded into the protocol when it was created. The independence of the monetary policy is enforced by the decentralized network of computers supporting the network and proof of work. The unknown consequences of record low interest rates, unprecedented levels of global monetary and fiscal stimulus, and deglobalization are all adding fuel to the fire of awareness and adoption. Longer-term drivers include slow and steady inflation and the great wealth transfer to a millennial demographic that has a favorable opinion on digital assets. So they kind of lay out and then they go into depth of each one of those key points throughout the thesis. Now, a couple things that they've got some good quotes in here, but one of them that I really enjoyed was, "You don't need a PhD to understand that the number of dollars just doubled, whereas the Bitcoin supply just halved." And that was a quote from John Vincent from Wacom Capital Management. Now, they also go into the annualized issuance rate and total supply. So they're talking about the halving cycles where the rate of issued Bitcoin decreases and total expansion gradually. It's disinflationary, so it's not deflationary until all of it has been issued and more is lost through malfeasance than is created, but eventually it will become deflationary. And then giving some credence, at least, that people are looking at the research and citing it as a possibility, Fidelity Investments actually cited Plan B's stock to flow ratio. So what they're showing is the scarcity. Stock to flow means the stock, the available stock of a good, or I guess a commodity, versus the flow of newly issued units of that commodity into the market. So with gold, it would be how much above ground gold is there on the market versus how much is being mined every year. For gold, it's just below, in and around the 2% range, a little bit below. And so here it shows Bitcoin stock to flow ratio along with a few other are seen as kind of like hard monetary assets. So they have platinum and palladium, which are way low on the scale. They've got stock to flow ratios of like one or two, I believe. They've got silver up here, which is in and around 20. They have Bitcoin in 2019, which was above that of silver. They have Bitcoin this year, which is in and around the 40 range. And then they have Bitcoin over the next year within 2021, which will be ekingly close to the stock to flow of gold. And then they show Bitcoin in 2025 after the next halving, and the stock to flow of Bitcoin at that point is in and around double that of gold, which we've never seen a monetary asset like that in human history. It is absolute scarcity. And to see how people in general react to that kind of scarcity and that kind of like perfect monetary asset and that perfect monetary tool will be very, very interesting. So yes, this kind of like current Bitcoin epoch is very exciting, but what happens when Bitcoin becomes actually less scarce than gold? And that the answer to that will happen within this decade. I don't know what to expect with that, especially given what's happening fiscally and with monetary policy around the world right now. It's a whole new ballgame. And for Bitcoin to be kind of reaching this level of monetary scarcity in this unprecedented time of bailouts and quantitative easing and just money printing and devaluation, it's kind of like a perfect storm. It's like this weird black swan event that we're all watching unfolding. And even though it's over the course of years, those not in this space don't really understand what's going on. And I barely know how to wrap my head around it. So somebody who hasn't even started diving into this subject will have a hell of a time. But regardless, insane times, and kind of cool to see some of the smartest people in the room wake up to this, a Bitcoin investment thesis from Fidelity. Who would have thought? Let's move on here. This, I'm not going to lie, this pissed me off. So Ledger, they create what I believe to be a pretty good product, okay? So they create hardware wallets so that you can secure your Bitcoin and other digital assets if you so choose, but, you know, Bitcoin. They create hardware wallets. I use them. I've ordered them in the past. What I don't have a gripe with the actual device itself. What I have a gripe with here is the data practices of the company with its customers, namely. And so what happened is they had a breach, a data breach of their marketing database. So I'm going to read a little bit here from their statement. They said, what happened? On the 14th of July, 2020, a research participating in our bounty program made us aware of a potential data breach on the Ledger website. We immediately fixed this breach after receiving the researcher's report and underwent an internal investigation. A week after patching the breach, we discovered it had been further exploited on the 25th of June by an unauthorized third party who accessed our e-commerce and marketing database used to send order confirmations and such promotional emails, consisting mostly of email addresses, but with a subset including also contact and order details such as first name, last name, postal address, email address, and phone number. Your payment information and crypto funds are safe. To be as transparent as possible, we wanted to explain what happened. An unauthorized third party had access to a portion of our e-commerce and marketing database through an API key. The API key has been deactivated and is no longer accessible. And so they said that mostly it was email addresses that were leaked. Approximately 1 million of them. 1 million email addresses. Now, further that, there was a subset of around 9,500 customers, which I guess compared to 1 million is not nearly as bad, but still, those people had first name, last name, postal address, phone number, and ordered products leaked as well. So they contacted those 9,500 directly with what was leaked of theirs. And basically, if you ordered a Ledger, odds are your email address was obtained. So what do you do in this instance? Well, number one, get two-factor authentication on that email address. So you, and not SMS, okay? So SMS is where, in order to log into a service, they send you a text message. I would not utilize that because, again, if somebody gets a hold of your email address and can SIM swap you, can basically social engineer a way to get access to your phone number, well, then they can start to get into your accounts. Make sure that all of your accounts have different passwords. Utilize a password manager, something like LastPass. Actually, Nord does have one as well. So if you're looking at that, they do have NordPass. But there's a number of solutions like that. So you don't have to remember every single password. So you can have different ones and very complex ones for every single service. And all you need to remember is a single password over everything. Okay, so I utilize a number of different solutions, but there are many out there. So please look into that. Beyond that, it's tough. Like, I mean, the damage is kind of already done. If you have personal accounts associated with that email address, then people can start to maybe piece together what services you use. And they for sure know that you at least have interest in Ledger's products, meaning that you likely hold Bitcoin or other digital assets. And so if other data is leaked with this, like if somebody looks, sees your email and knows that you are interested in Bitcoin, then they can start to look around and start to find perhaps other social profiles and places where your email is associated with online, any public posts that you've done with that email address. And then they can start to try and get into those services, and potentially if they get into some of them, then they can start to try and get around and try to get money that you may have on exchanges. So if you have a Ledger and you also have money that is sitting online in an online exchange, then perhaps you want to think about disassociating that email address from that account, or making sure that you're locked down with two-factor, that is using an app like Google Authenticator, not SMS-based. But basically, try to lock your shit down, because with this email leak, and again, I say I'm pissed at Ledger. I am, because it was irresponsible of them to have this kind of data just easily available for somebody to gain access to. I mean, they're a security company, right? They specialize in creating devices to secure your money. They got to secure their fucking data at the same time. So this is not okay. What I will say is that on the bright side, any other company that wasn't actively dunking on them on Twitter over the past couple of days is probably very much looking at their data storage practices and trying to lock shit down so that they don't have this happen to them, so that people can dunk on them. Furthermore, obviously Ledger now is more than incentivized to try and do damage control and make sure this never happens again. But all in all, again, people are, you need to learn that in ordering Bitcoin stuff, try not to associate important email addresses, or try to convey as little data about yourself in obtaining Bitcoin related stuff as possible, because all of that data can potentially come back to you. For those that actually had their addresses and things like that revealed and their phone numbers, that's super shitty, and you've got to be super careful, because that opens you up to actual physical attack, right? If somebody knows specifically where you live, that you hold cryptocurrency, that you've ordered hardware wallets denoting that you would have enough Bitcoin to even hold on a hardware device, you could become a victim of like the quote unquote $5 wrench attack, where somebody actually comes to your house and says, hey, I want your Bitcoin. Give it to me, sign it on your ledger, otherwise I'm gonna pop you, right? So just keep that in mind. Be very careful, and maybe think about storing your ledger off-site, or having backups elsewhere, or not having easy access to it, or creating plausible deniability. All ledgers allow you to create a passphrase enabled secondary account. So unless you input that passphrase, it looks as if your ledger has, you know, you would put a small amount in the regular ledger, and then you'd enable a passphrase and put the real savings in that part. And so that way the person doesn't know what they're looking at. Okay. Anyways, enough about that. Unfortunate, but just be careful out there. And same thing goes, it could have been any company. You know, they shouldn't have been keeping this much information easily accessible, but fuck. Yeah. On to positive news. Matt Odell from TFTC, Tales from the Crypt, and Dennis Ryman put together this website called Bitcoin Donation Portal. Support Bitcoin developers so they can focus on building our future. This website lists people working on Bitcoin and related projects. The goal is to increase the visibility of contributors to the space that are accepting donations. If you are currently working on a Bitcoin-related open source project, submit a pull request to get yourself added. Being listed on the site should not be considered an endorsement. The order of individuals shown is randomized for every visit, and it has a number of different developers contributing to Bitcoin in various ways that you yourself can go and donate to if you enjoy the projects they are working on. Already I've seen somebody donate to Luke Childs, who's working on Umbrel, which is a implementation of being able to run Bitcoin core and software stack on top of it, kind of like Mynode. Really cool to see. It's nice to have a resource where people can just say, hey, I want to contribute, who's doing important stuff, and you can find it. So even if you can't contribute, share this page. It's excellent. Kudos to both Matt and Dennis for putting this together, and I can't wait to see it be built out even more. In the realm of hardware wallets, we were talking about Ledger before. This is a new device coming out. Now, there is a pre-order for this. I would not pre-order yet because you want to, you know, don't trust verify. You want to make sure there's a product behind it that's actually hit the market that people have used before you like pre-order something. It's like, yeah, just common sense. But It does look promising. It looks kind of cool. So this is called Passport, an elegant and secure Bitcoin hardware wallet. And so what's important about this is it says it's it has a number of features and it's fully air-gapped. And so it says, to sign transactions, simply insert a micro SD card or scan a QR code. Wallets like Blue Wallet already support multi-QR transmission, which I did a video on with the Kobo Vault. So this would likely work with that. And Passport is compatible with any software wallet that supports partially signed Bitcoin transactions over micro SD or QR, which would mean... like Electrum Wallet, which would also mean, I believe, Wasabi Wallet. So there's a number of options, which is excellent because I use all of these. Passport is open source and uses the same security architecture and firmware base as Cold Cards. So they did pull from the open source software. They're going to open source everything. I saw the discussion between them and Rodolfo Novak behind CoinKite and Cold Card online. And so they said the circuit board design and firmware will be published on GitHub with hardware license under CERN's open hardware license and firmware under GPL3. No unknown code will run on the device. It's completely air-gapped. Passport powered is powered by two AAA batteries and includes no USB port, Bluetooth, or wireless communications of any kind. Passport has numerous security features such as security lights and an avalanche noise source for entropy. And Passport uses more trustable components like a screen with circuitry etched directly into the glass, which allows for easy inspection and production. At production, rather. So I'm very interested to see this device. I hope that I get my hands on it when it comes out so I can do a video on it and take a look at it. But yeah, always great to see more hardware coming to market that's actually trying to do focus on security instead of just adding a ton of shit coins. And so I've seen more and more of that. And also the interoperability is important and security features like air gap transactions where you're not actually plugging it into a computer if you don't want to. And so we've started to see that. Like Cold Card is beautiful. You're seeing better things out of if you're using Trezor and Ledger. You can use them with alternatives instead of their like in-house stuff that they have. And you know, we have things like Shift Crypto, their Bitbox 02, and the Kobo Vault that I did. So always great to see better stuff. I saw a lot of stuff early on, like I kind of got fatigue from all of these devices being sent to me because great, you created a hardware wallet, but like it has dick all features and you just added a bunch of coins and like none of the efficiencies that I want out of Bitcoin. So to see stuff like this hitting the market, this is what I want to see. So, you know, cautiously optimistic, but can't wait to get one in my hands. Moving on, in the same respect, I made a video the other day, which is how to use multi-sig Bitcoin wallets with Electrum desktop wallet. And so in this example, what a multi-sig wallet is where you say you have three devices in this example, and you require at least two of them to approve and move a transaction. Once you set it up, what you would do ideally is put those devices in geographically diverse locations so that if somebody tried that $5 wrench attack, like with the Ledger thing, and came to your house and said, hey, give me all your Bitcoin or else, well, tough shit, you don't have access to it. That person would then have to take the risk of picking you up, bringing you and your device with you and driving somewhere where hopefully you lead them to the next device to approve the transaction, all while not getting caught. And at that point, odds are somebody would just cut their losses and fuck off, hopefully anyways, but it definitely mitigates that risk. So in this example, I used the Cold Card, the Bitbox 02, and I also used the Ledger Nano S to set this up, but it could be any combination of a number of different wallets. You could use Trezor, you could use the Kobo Vault, you could use three Cold Cards if you want. So there's a lot of different variations of whatever you want. You could definitely eventually use the one I was just talking about, the Foundation, God, I already forgot what it's called. The Passport. You could definitely use that when it comes out. But, well, I haven't tested it yet. But in theory, you could use that in concert with something like that. So if you're curious about checking that out, link to that will be in the show notes down below. And lastly, I just wanted to touch on two new articles from the Bitsy Academy, one from Verify, who put together Bitcoin wallets, how to choose. They break down some of the qualities that you should be looking for in a Bitcoin wallet. This article I find is relatively noob friendly. So if you have a friend who's like, what Bitcoin wallet should I get? And you point them in a good direction and they ask why, well, this will give them more insight. So they go through, to my surprise, not to my surprise, because these guys are smart, but they go and they recommend all of my favorite wallets on mobile. So they recommended Blue Wallet, Blockstream Green, and Samurai. So I also tagged in my video tutorials for all of those wallets down below the article. Check it out, give it a share. And then finally, special thanks to Emmy for putting together this article on the Academy. It's all about exploring Bitcoin's energy consumption. So a lot of people will FUD that and use it as a talking point for why Bitcoin is bad. But they don't take into account, yes, Bitcoin consumes a lot of energy, but where's it getting that energy from? And by and large, it's either renewables like hydro or wind or solar or geothermal, or it's waste that would have been vented into the atmosphere, like natural gas or methane, being utilized in a less, in a more emission-friendly way than would have been utilized, while also making those energy producers money where they would have been at a loss. So highly encourage you check this out. It cites a number of other articles in it, and it's also another great share for those friends that may be saying, hey, well, isn't Bitcoin bad for the environment? Send them this. Anyways, there I'm going to wrap up. Bit of a longer one today. I guess I haven't done a news video in a little while. It's been a little busy, but yeah, hopefully this was helpful to you. As always, thank you so much. And please, if you're here on YouTube, hit like, subscribe, and share. All of those things really do help. So do go ahead and do those. If you want to hit me up on other platforms, I always stream live for these news videos to Facebook Live, to Twitter via Periscope. I'm on DLive, I'm on Twitch. You can find me in lots of places. Also, you can find this audio only on the podcast on pretty much every platform, Spotify, Apple, Google, lots of them. So search BTC Sessions, you will find me, and subscribe there. It always helps. If you want to help out the show in another way, you can hit up the sponsor I mentioned, Ledin.io, down below. You can also check out NordVPN down below. Or if you really loved what you saw, you can always drop me a Bitcoin Lightning Network tip at my tippin.me page. So that is tippin, tippin.me/@BTC Sessions. And with that, I am out. Have yourselves a wonderful evening, a wonderful day, wherever you are. And I will see you next time for your daily session.